Jock Jams. Jock Jams are great.
Jock Jams.
Do you remember Jock Jams?
No, I don't know what Jock Jams is.
It was a CD compilation album of like pump up jams that you could like play before a sporting event.
Yeah, for like stadium anthems. Yeah. Y'all ready for this? I'm psyched out of this podcast.
All right. I'm so hyped. Let's do it.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Jim Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
We need some new intro music, like with like names and stuff. Coming in at lead host, standing 5'5". I don't know, 5'8"? How tall are you? 5'8"?
5'5 was a choice, so I'm going to just say that.
Yeah. I'm 5'5".
There were easy numbers to say, all right?
Am I the lead host?
Yeah, all right. Back to Dante.
Ooh.
We're diverging
back
a little bit.
Back into Dante.
From Dante a little bit, though. His,
that's
his
back into sin. That's
his right. story, his descent into hell does not follow the seven deadly sins directly.
Sure.
Took some artistic liberties.
It's a non-canonical interpretation of a non-canonical.
Right. It's all non-canonical.
But we're making it work. I've put it. It's going to work out. But before we get there, we're doing some tasology.
Ooh,
or tasography. Tasography.
Tasography. Excuse you, sir.
I think it's tasography.
Tasography.
What is this word?
I don't have any justification for that. I'm just
all right, we're reading some like tea leaves. We talked about last week on the podcast.
Okay.
Yes.
Elise, you made tea this morning.
I did, yes.
And you brought in your cup.
Did you make tea just
took one for
just
the
for this?
Team.
Do you
what kind of tea
make
did you make?
Yeah.
This is English breakfast tea.
Oh, it doesn't work with English tea. That's rule number one.
Well, we're going to get an English prophecy.
Oh.
All right.
Depressed bad teeth.
Cheerio, old chap. Yes. All right. Well, anyway, I uploaded that photo to ChatGPT.
Okay. And ChatGPT is going to read our tea leaves.
I said, can you read these tea leaves for our group?
All right. Mm-hmm. What did ChatGPT say?
Here we go.
Okay.
We got a bird near the rim, upper right.
Sure.
Clearly.
What does that mean?
Well, first, here's the photo so you can look.
Yeah, absolutely. I see a bird at the rim on the upper right. I mean, there's stuff at the upper right.
There's a lot of stuff, yeah.
A bird, like a bird in flight or like
a
hand
flight.
Gesture?
The bird in flight.
Got a finger.
All right, well, this is according to ChatGPT, this symbolizes news or communication. Your group may soon receive important information.
Oh.
We have a cluster at the bottom center.
Sure.
And this could resemble a plant or tree sprouting. It often means growth, new beginnings, or a creative project taking root.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. I like all of this.
We're getting
for us.
Yeah. So
7 years in.
So welcome to all our new listeners, evidently today. Yeah. And goodbye. Yeah, right. I'm sure you left immediately. Yeah. Specks forming a trail. Looks like little footsteps or a winding path. This could mean progress is happening even if it's slow.
It is slow.
And then scattered specks around the sides. These are distractions or small worries. Maybe there's a lot. There's been a lot on everyone's plates lately. Consider taking a step back. And overall, for the group, a message is on its way, possibly unexpected but important. Growth and change are brewing, no pun intended. This is what.
ChatGPT said no pun intended.
ChatGPT said no pun intended, yeah.
I don't like when the AI gets a sense of humor. No. That makes me nervous.
I've asked ChatGPT for some puns before, and they were not great. So, this is,
a step up for
but
ChatGPT.
But it's essential to stay grounded and not let little worries take over.
Grounded would be a coffee pun, not a tea pun. Yeah.
Something exciting may be coming soon. And then asked if I would want a more mystical or poetic version.
Yes.
I think we're good.
Yes to both. Yes to both. Make it more unhinged.
I mean, that was fun. I will say I probably could have said most of those things. I mean, not with like, I could
that
have
was
like,
nicer
like,
than I would have gone for us.
It's basically nonsense. I mean, it's basically like a growth could be coming. Yeah. There's distractions in your life. Yeah, everybody has distractions. Nobody's like, I live a distraction-free life. Yeah.
Right.
I don't think that AI is any better at reading tea leaves than a human person.
Than anyone else, yeah.
Right.
Especially, I mean, like, those are all pretty benign.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Well, so just for some background, if you didn't listen last week, we had a news article where a lady divorced her husband over a ChatGPT
tea leaf
reading
where
at it least told her. We did not get, y'all get divorced,
Right, yeah.
Or the podcast is over.
That's right.
Break it up right now.
Yeah.
We got at least like, hey, you could be distracted. Growth could come. Who knows?
Right.
You have the grim in your tea leaves. You're already dead.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if that would be under the more poetic, mystical reading.
Yeah. We'll go back to that. This could be a new spinoff series. Weekly.
Where we just have our
ChatGPT
tea leaves
for readings.
ChatGPT.
It's pretty good. Yeah. All right. I've got some good news for the world. For a quicker news story.
We need that. Okay. We need good news.
You know, sure, we've all been concerned about some global warming and climate change.
Yes, among other things.
Well, don't worry. It's getting fixed.
Yeah?
Oh. It is. Yeah.
How is it getting fixed?
By our friends at Antarctica, the penguins.
Okay. Oh. But what are the penguins doing?
It's
going to
be like penguins are farting and it's fixing the ozone layer or something.
The penguins are pooping and it's fixing the ozone layer.
Oh. So close. Gosh, I had no idea.
Yeah. Points for calling
Am
that,
I
at
a
least.
Scientist?
No, I think you're a tea leaf reader.
Right.
Penguin poop is saving the planet.
Okay. Yeah. What is penguin poop doing to save the planet?
Penguin poop emits large amounts of ammonia.
That doesn't seem like a good thing for
Great
the planet.
Chemical.
Well, it rises into the atmosphere and is triggering cloud formation over Antarctica.
Okay. Well, and this cloud formation is good?
A cloud.
Yeah, increased cloud
poop.
Formation reflects sunlight away from the Earth's surface.
Sure.
And potentially can offset regional global warming. So we're saving the ice caps by penguins pooping. Not by any of our efforts or
seems
our
like
work.
Right.
The penguins are just trying to save themselves.
Right.
It seems like self-protection. Bat guano also produces large amounts of ammonia, if I'm not incorrect.
Yeah.
Which I might be. So is that something that we should be looking into?
Maybe there's a lot of bats in Austin. Do they have? Yeah. Is it cooler there because of the cloud cover?
I mean, they would say it's cooler, but I don't think they mean temperature.
It definitely is. It's not a swamp town like Houston, so.
It's a vibe.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. Penguin poop.
Have the penguins just like adopted a high fiber diet?
Yeah, yeah.
Like we're gonna do our part.
Maybe we built a Taco Bell down there. Yeah. Right. Like, we're just going all the time.
We're in it to win it.
It's just flying right through me. That being burrito. Yeah, I don't know. Yo, are penguins pooping more?
Hard to say.
Who has studied this? Like, we're
penguin poopologist,
right? Like, your future's so bright when you graduate from school with a biology degree.
You have a PhD. You can also right.
Yeah.
Now you're
is this something? Yeah,
poop
do you
samples.
Study for, or do you just fall into?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
This, yeah.
Well, hopefully, you don't fall
I
into.
I feel like
it.
You like end up being the penguin poop studier.
Well, don't worry. This was written by the number two penguin poop studier. So, yes.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right, on to death and sin and hells of fire or fires of hell. Yeah. What else we got?
All right, let's dive down into Dante.
We can't top Patrick's number two joke. So
no.
Okay, so we are going to go through three circles of hell today.
Ooh,
are we?
That was unexpected.
Yeah.
So, this is news.
I thought we only had four left.
No, we have five left. We have fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth.
There are not. We're doing the circles of hell, not the. I thought we were doing the seven deadly
sins. Well, because like ring five and ring seven are very, very similar.
Okay.
Ring five is wrath, and ring seven is violence.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So like,
we're combining wrath and violence as one deadly sin.
As wrath.
Okay, I got you.
Because what are we supposed to, and then so we're going to do five and seven together.
I got you.
And then we will jump back to ring six.
Okay, cool.
So we're gonna play around with the timeline.
So three
bit.
Rings,
it's gonna be a
two deadly sins.
Three rings, two deadly sins. Yeah, because five and seven are pretty similar.
Okay.
All right. So we've been going down into hell. Last month we talked about Virgil. Virgil's leading Dante through hell. And last month we talked about greed and gluttony for the next sins. So now we keep going. So we're going to talk about wrath. So
Verse
5 is wrath. Now this is going to be different than violence, though. We've got to make a distinction there.
What is Dante's distinction between wrath and violence?
So this is how I kind of like basically pull from this is wrath is more of like your innate anger.
Okay.
So if you are like a moment of anger or if somebody makes you angry and you yell and scream at them or fight them or punch them, that it would be wrath. Violence is a premeditated version of the same thing. So this isn't like my neighbor said something and I punched him. This is my neighbor said something and I went home and I plotted how to punch them.
And executed, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you also did it. Yeah. Okay.
So
but he also kind of weirdly lumps sloth in with wrath too. It's like
there is a little bit of I'm going to use sloth for the next one, but it is a little bit more of like a there's a passive wrath attached to
this. Right. He gets a little like poetic and confusing. Yeah. Like he's already poetic and confusing, but it's like a little bit more so.
Taking
I think.
It to a new level of ostentatiousness.
Well, it was funny because I was researching. I was like, all right, where exactly does sloth fit into this? And it turns out nobody knows.
Yeah, okay. It really doesn't. Yeah.
Like there's four different answers. Like.
I kind of included in the next one, and I'll get in there for why.
Yeah. Well, let's start here.
All right,
with wrath.
So wrath. So this is a fifth circle of wrath.
What's happening in the fifth circle?
The actively wrathful fight each other on the surface.
Okay, let's set the scene. Yeah. The river Styx.
Oh.
Not how you know it from Greek mythology, though.
Okay.
A swamp.
Swamp. Okay. Yeah. River Styx swamp.
Right.
Houston.
Right. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay.
We're already there.
I've been to Houston. Look, I've driven on 45. The actively wrathful are fighting each other the entire drive home.
That's fair argument. It's hard to go against. Okay.
Yeah. It's a slimy, stinky, swampy water, and the wrathful are fighting each other on the surface of that water. They're just wading around, punching one another, and then the passively wrathful are just like lying underneath the water.
Just like gurgling.
Yeah.
Love that.
Right. They can't. It's something about like they're not able to express their emotions, right? Yeah, because they didn't express. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He goes back and forth. Sure. It's like don't express emotions, bad. But if you don't express your emotions, that is also bad.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is kind of like the two sides of that same coin.
Dante needs to pick a side.
Yeah. I always think they sound like the punishments sound so silly when we just read them. I don't know if you've ever looked at any artwork of Dante's Inferno, but it is dark.
I would imagine so. All right. We got our famous character here is Pluto.
Not the dog. We talked about him last time, too. He's been in a couple.
Yeah, Pluto, which would be the Roman version of the Greek Hades.
Right. Got it. The underworld.
King of the underworld. So he's down here on this level.
Okay.
And then there is, in the distance, a big city, the city of Dis. He's dissing it.
Right.
This is Dante's diss track.
This city sucks.
Which lives within this. And then Pluto lives there. So, I mean, it's basically like, here it is. And then also, in this are fallen angels. Now we're reaching more of a supernatural punishment as well. So fallen angels who have rebelled against God are here fighting once another for eternity.
I wonder if this is where dystopia comes from.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that predates Dante.
Yeah, which way that goes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. What about from our infographic here, Elise?
So infographic really didn't have anything special or helpful for me. I did find out that there is something called Infernopedia.
Okay.
Which is some Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Just about.
Dedicated to Dante's Inferno. So I got did some reading there. I had missed the whole like subplot about Beatrice. So I'm going to bring it up now.
Sure.
That Dante is sort of rescued at the beginning of the story-ish. Rescued by Virgil, who is sent by Beatrice, who is this character that is supposedly Dante's like ideal woman. Mm-hmm. And he is kind of on a search. He's on a quest looking for her in one of these circles of hell.
Okay.
So at this point in the story, when he gets to Wrath, he and Virgil find out, I think from this fire demon that they ride across. Who's a boat also?
Sure.
It's fire demon / boat.
Yeah, yeah. He's got to have a side gig. It's, you know, it's something to make a living.
Pay the bills, you know. So they're riding this fire demon across the river Styx. They're not down in the mud. Tells him that Beatrice has finally accepted Lucifer's offer of marriage. So that gets dropped in there.
Cool.
And so one of the reasons that they proceed to the city Dis is in search of Beatrice and Lucifer, still trying to find her. So that's like another subplot that's going on in the background there that we have not touched on until this point. I'm not making you aware.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So now it's a good
context. It's a love story. It's
not
romance-y.
Just a tour.
Right.
You know, he's not just getting the behind the scenes tour of hell on the little golf cart, you know, driving around, you know, like, oh, look at this. You look to your left. Yeah.
Like Universal Studios behind the scenes.
Sure. And then Jaws pops up. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Which might happen. One of the other ones. Yeah. All right. He's looking for someone specific. You know, his lady love who is accepted Lucifer's, you know, his proposings of marriage. I mean,
that's a choice.
Yeah. That's, he has kind of a...
That's her vibe. It's going to be tough to commit. It's tough to compete.
Yeah.
Virgil is kind of like, he's dropping some quotes too. So when they first get there, Virgil, who is his like spirit guide through Hades, goes, "See the souls over whom anger prevailed. In the warm bath of the sun, they were hateful. Down here in the black sludge of the River Styx, do they wish they had never been born."
Well, there you go.
Okay.
It's like that's a good full melodrama. Yeah.
All right, so we're skipping ring 6 and going straight to ring 7.
Yeah,
for violence.
Anger.
For violence.
Oh, violence. Sorry.
Okay.
And this one has 3 sub-rings.
Okay.
So there's rings within rings within rings.
It yes. is very
this is like a WWE SmackDown situation.
That's right. True. Right. It's a cage match now.
Right.
make the ring smaller. And
right,
then,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
fights happening everywhere.
I'm going to need a map. Like.
I bet the Infernopedia has
or that. It's right. like a 3-ring circus, which is its own version of hell.
Oh, sure.
So, right. yes. yeah.
Depends also. On where the clowns are. Yeah. That's the bad one.
The innermost circle is
right.
clowns.
One is clowns, one is abused right. animals right. for performing for your entertainment, and the other is trapeze artists, which is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
But you're kind of secretly hoping one falls.
And that's why you're in hell.
There it is.
All right, so this is 3 kinds of violence.
Okay.
Ring 1, violence against neighbor.
Okay, so I punch Elise.
Yeah, this would be murderers, warmongers, plunderers, tyrants.
Okay.
They are immersed in Phlegethon. It's another river of boiling blood. So, ooh, you know, we've got nice. Like a tributary yeah. into Styx, but this one is boiling blood.
This
boiling
one, okay. Like centaurs show up in this one too, don't they? And they're like shooting arrows at people.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
So, why not? Yeah.
So, as they wallow in blood during their lives, so they are immersed in boiling blood forever, each according to the degree of their guilt.
Okay.
I guess one is more like, if you're not that guilty, like manslaughter, it's like more right. like lukewarm blood.
I murdered him, but he had it coming.
Like, yeah, like, yeah, sure. You know, yeah, like, all right, we all get it.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah. yeah. All right, so
like if that's the neighbor that's mowing his lawn at 7 a.m. Lucifer's like, yeah, we get it. You know, like,
what's ring 2? Violence against neighbor. What's ring 2?
Violence against self.
Okay, so I hurt myself.
Mm-hmm. These would be people who have committed suicide.
Okay.
So this is a wood, and they are transformed into trees, gnarly thorn trees that are being fed upon by harpies and hideous clawed birds with the faces of women. Those are the harpies. And then the only way you can speak is if part of the tree is broken and bleeding.
Jeez.
Eek.
Yeah, this one's pretty gross. You know,
yeah.
I don't like that one.
Dante is not cool with the suicide. I mean, yeah. that's very
granted,
anti.
Nobody was at that time. So
yeah.
sure. not that anybody's like cool with
but
it
But this
now,
one, yeah, this one seems pretty dark.
Also, real quick, we are recording in the midst of some construction work that's happening at Lord of Light. So if you hear a banging in the background... Everything's fine.
Part of the ambiance.
Right.
Yes. It's just the trees.
Sodom.
All right. And then finally, ring 3, violence against God, art, and nature.
Violence against art. Are these supposed to be getting worse in severity from 1 to 3, or is it the opposite direction?
I mean, violence against God is probably worse.
Right.
And I think art and nature are associated with being godlike.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, Dante is an artiste. Or sees himself as that. So obviously right. a sin against his yeah. art is the worst.
Takes himself yeah. a little seriously, maybe.
So this one, great plain of burning sand, scorched by great flakes of flame falling slowly from the sky. So so snow flame is happening while you're just, and everybody's laying like prostrate in the sand as it just like falls upon them.
So I'm not saying that this sounds appealing, but I do think snow flame could be really pretty to see from a distance.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when you're trying to dodge it all the time, it's probably a little stressful.
Right. Yeah. But if you're just like
watching. Catch it on your tongue.
Yeah.
Well, the cool thing about snow flame is that no 2 snow flames are alike.
Right. Obviously.
So that's pretty exciting.
We're all unique.
All right, so I think, you know, outside of Dante, what do we do with this idea of violence / wrath as a deadly sin? Like, what is it for us? What does that look like? Because,
Yeah, I do think that one thing that we kind of skipped over is that in Dante's sort of theology of this, right, wrath is a dividing point in between sins that are just a perverted love of something. We call it a perversion of divine love. Yeah. And sins that are more of aggressive towards, not a perversion of some type of love,
right.
that are aggressive and bad kind of on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like an interesting note. I don't know, like, I've never really figured out why he draws that line.
So this would
right
be
there.
Like gluttony being the perversion
the
of the love
of food.
Food.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like food is good and right. needed for life, but you right. take it to an extreme
to
and
an
suddenly
extreme.
It's bad.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Violence, theoretically, wrath, theoretically, mm-hmm. does not have a purpose
right.
in life.
Well,
yeah.
you know, he separates violence and wrath. And so he talks about wrath being like a demand for justice, like a love for justice that is taken to an extreme.
Okay, so wrath
so it's like
is still
for him,
that
that's like why he's got wrath separately.
That's yeah. interesting. Yeah,
and then, but you know, maybe just in the way that we use our language today, it's pretty
sure.
hard to differentiate between the two. But from here on out in hell, it's much more like these things are bad on their own and are not yeah. rooted in any kind of like love or good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think for us. Like, anger is kind of this weird emotion
yeah.
that for Christianity to wrestle with.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One, we have to wrestle with God is described as angry often in the
yes.
Bible. And then we have to wrestle with internally, like, what is anger, positive, negative, or neutral?
Yeah.
And I guess, depending on context, yes to all three, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
it could potentially be, like and when God is angry, especially on behalf of those who are preyed upon are the victims, we can definitely understand that. Like, I am
mm-hmm.
angry that there are people who are victimized by the system, by the powerful, by whomever has got a boot on their neck, and we should be angry about those
mm-hmm.
things.
Yes.
Now, but anger to the point of I need to hit my neighbor because of my annoyances,
mm-hmm.
then we are teetering onto, like, it's not just a justifiable or a righteous anger, it's just anger.
Yeah.
Or it's just this emotion within me that is superseding my rationality.
Yeah.
And so I think we as humans, and especially as Christians, have to weigh that out amongst ourselves, because sometimes we see things and I want to rush in anger, but is that righteousness or is that just anger? And
yeah.
and that can be a very difficult thing to line to draw.
Yeah, right? I think wrath is helpful as a term in that sense,
yeah.
that right, because anger can be in these different places. I think wrath is negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think when we fall in, like, wrath is where we're no longer acting out of a real sense of justice. We're maybe
mm-hmm.
acting for our own benefit. We're maybe acting out of our own self-absorption or something. Like, right? I think that's where the wrath comes in. So I'm thinking about, like, the guy, I'm going to forget his name, but the guy who murdered the CEO of the medical group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luigi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name is Luigi.
It
yeah.
really is Luigi.
It really is, yeah.
I wasn't ready for that. I was assuming I was getting led into a trap.
A Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. So, you know, I think there's a lot of ways in which we can have justifiable anger about the healthcare system.
And one should, honestly.
And, right,
yes.
yeah. There's
yeah.
a lot of things that are not right about the healthcare system in the United States. But I think that when we act out in murder of a CEO of the corporation, as, you know, horrible as the actions of that CEO might be,
yeah.
that steps into wrath,
mm-hmm.
right? And
yeah.
I think that's a helpful distinction in how we can kind of make that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the plotting or the scheming.
Sure.
So, I don't know if y'all watch Andor on Disney Plus.
I'm behind.
It's
no spoilers.
It's a Disney show about
yeah.
Star Wars. And so basically it's early Empire, and there's in season 2 right now, which is really, really great. The Empire needs this basically product produced on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
They need the product, but they don't want to just go in and just take it all and
no.
destroy the local economy and basically destroy this product. So
then people will be angry.
They are scheming. How do we turn everyone against them? And
ooh.
So like we make them feel like we first elevate them so they seem pious and pompous, and ironically they speak French on this planet. They speak the French accent, and then we instigate them so much
yeah.
that they fight back, and then we're justified
yeah.
on doing anger. And
sure.
so when people hear about the Empire went and squashed this planet, they're not going to feel bad.
They're good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, yeah, they're those pompous, pious jerks who turn to terrorism and violence, and they deserved it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so I think, you know, you could be a very wrathful person without ever, you know, raising your fists in anger
mm-hmm.
by
sure, absolutely.
Doing things like this,
yes.
by looking at, you know, those who are on the bottoms of society and using inflammatory language or dehumanizing things. I mean, like, Adolf Hitler did not kill anyone directly, but by constantly referring to the
sure.
Jews as vermin
yep.
and
yeah.
dehumanizing them, he is incredibly wrathful in this, but this is premeditated, I'm trying to bring about a dehumanization of another person so that violence is inevitable.
Yeah.
He really never got a single one.
Well, he got one.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
All right. I do have a Bible story here for us to look at.
All right.
It's probably, you know, if you're thinking what's the most prominent anger story in the Bible, this is the one I pulled. But I got a twist at the end, and that's Cain and Abel.
Okay. All right.
With a twist?
Well, the twist is Cain's descendant.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I like Cain's descendant. Go ahead.
Me too. All right. So Abel and Cain, the two firstborn sons of Adam and Eve, they each come to God with an offering. Abel brings some grain, and Cain, or Abel brings a lamb, and Cain brings some grain. And God likes Abel's lamb and does not like Cain's grain.
I get it.
Yeah.
Could have at least turned it into bread. You know what I'm saying?
I know,
like,
right?
Yeah, like, it's like I got a project.
Right,
like,
yeah. Thank you. With all my spare time. Right.
Does it look like I'm in a sourdough? Come on.
Right.
Cain, filled with jealousy, kills his brother. And
well, that took a turn.
Yeah. Womp, womp.
All right, so here, Genesis chapter 4. Right. This is from 9 to 16, and I'll read this here. The Lord said to Cain, "Where's your brother Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?"
I love that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out from the ground. Now you're under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." But the Lord said to him, "Not so. Anyone who kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over." The Lord put a mark on Cain so that no one who found him would kill him. All right, so the Lord went out of the Lord's presence, lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. So some interesting questions here. One, who are these people? And this is Adam and Eve's, like, first two kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's for a different episode. Yeah.
Right.
It's a reasonable question.
It is a reasonable question for a different episode, yeah.
Well, it's a big question.
It's a big question.
Yeah.
We can dodge around it by not saying this is a literal, this is what.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, these are the only two people, you know. But the other question is, what's up with his mark, right? Like, this is a good question. How is Cain marked? Now, there are some theories out there that are racist.
Yes.
It also potentially has horns.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That would do it.
Yeah, or kind of like a tattooed by God. You know, these are some of the marks that have been theorized by people. We'd have no information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a physical something in him has been changed by this violent act.
Yes.
And I think that for me is like kind of this important thing. Like, he is physically himself changed.
Mm-hmm.
That he couldn't just hide it, bury his brother, and move on.
Mm-hmm.
That he is changed within. And then the mark is a physical reminder of that.
Yeah.
But what's more interesting is Cain has some kids, and they have kids, and they have kids. And his, like, great-great-great-grandkid, Lamech, comes around. And Lamech decides to sell it to his wife's a poem. Mm-hmm. He's a writer, too. You know, it's not a great poem.
It's better in the original language, allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. All right. He says this to his wives. "Ada and Zillah, listen to me. Wives of Lamech, hear my words. I've killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times."
Yeah, it's not very good.
Yeah, it's kind of,
it's a little on the nose.
Yeah. I can't imagine these wives like, ugh, we're going to listen to this poem again. It's pretty short, too.
Every night before bed.
Right.
But what I think is interesting here is the escalation, right? Like, this... Not only is a murder the punishment seven times, Lamech is like, no, 77 times.
Yeah.
Like, we have an escalation of vengeance. So not only does wrath, like, mark you, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
You know,
like, it has to be, it can never be satisfied.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think a very unique parallel with Jesus when his disciples ask him, "Should I forgive my brother seven times?" And Jesus responds, 77 times.
You know.
This is kind of like a really unique, clever callback.
Yes.
That this is the reversing of Cain and Abel and Lamech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the listeners at the time would have been familiar probably with this story, right?
Sure. They almost definitely would have been like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. They would have gotten it.
Yeah. They most of them would probably have memorized most of this story. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is pretty early on in the Bible, too. So yeah, if you're working your way through the memory part.
You've probably got this part.
If you haven't gotten to chapter four, you're not getting, you know, you haven't gotten it. On, you know, what have you got?
Memorization, not your strong point.
Yeah. So there you go. So I think that's wrath in the Bible. And I think kind of a reminder for all of us that it always will ask for more.
Yeah. I think kind of an interesting, if we're talking about wrath being like the perversion of anger that can sometimes be good, but is an emotion that we don't really know what to do with.
Yes.
Yeah.
The story about Jesus in the temple is always kind of a helpful touch point for me, right? Because everybody's probably a little bit familiar with the story, but he goes to the temple. Basically, the bones of it are that he finds all of these merchants set up in the temple, kind of trying to swindle people who are there to worship, that kind of thing. And he very premeditated goes and like sits down and braids a whip and then like takes his sweet
Depends
time.
On which version of the story you read, how long it, but yeah.
But I mean, he's thinking about
it,
right?
He puts intention into it,
yeah.
And then goes and kind of wrecks it and turns all the tables over and has this moment of, you know, very much acting out his anger towards that situation. And I think it's helpful for me to say that, you know, there are times when anger is, one, justified.
Sure.
Two, it can kind of give you jet fuel in a situation, right? Where it can spur you into action and it can reveal to you injustices and issues that need addressing.
Yeah.
Just, you know, kind of a flip side of that. Like, not all anger is bad on its own.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. I think that's why the distinction between that and wrath is so helpful, right? Because anger can have a purpose. I think for me, like, it's almost as though wrath is when the anger controls you as opposed to you still being in control of the anger. We can go back to Star Wars for further analogies on what happens when you let the anger to control you, but that's
the dark side.
Feel it pouring through you.
All right. Sure. All right. So let's backtrack to the sixth circle.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. These were the heretics.
Okay, so
this is definitely different from the seven deadly sins.
Yeah. Heresy is not a deadly sin.
Heresy is not.
So you're free to go.
It's on its own. Yeah, you're good.
All right. And there is a very clear heresy that Dante is addressing in this one. Not all heresies, but there's one very, very clear.
Okay.
And that is, when you die, your soul dies too.
Dante's
like, this is the only life you get. There is nothing beyond. That was the heresy he wants to address.
Yeah.
So, who are the heretics? Well, Epicurus, obviously.
That's who I was thinking.
We're calling him out.
He like accidentally calls out a pope. Too.
He does. Yeah,
he meant somebody else. Oh. But
he may have meant another guy.
Right, but he puts the pope's name because it's very similar.
Sure.
Whoops.
Yeah.
It's awkward.
Epicurus is here and. And all his followers are trapped in flaming tombs. And this, if you're the more and more heretical you are, the more your tomb is on fire.
Okay.
So,
just a little heresy. It's like a hot tub.
Yeah, you know, like it's, or maybe it's like warm. Yeah, it's like a little. That's a little hot. Psst, psst, a little, yeah, but not. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the thing. Also,
real quick. So, Epicurus was a philosopher who emphasized the ultimate good for the sense of indulgence. So, like all they needed to seek was pleasure.
Yeah,
that was the whole point of Epicurus and like Epicureanism. Now,
I see why that was popular.
Yeah, and why you might want to speak against it. Right. So, yeah. It was basically this is the only life you've got, and so you might as
live
well
it
just
up.
Live it up.
YOLO.
Everything for pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Medusa is also hanging out here.
Medusa.
Because all the snake hair.
Oh, she gets a bad rap, though.
You look at her, you turn to stone.
What exactly would be the good rap for Medusa?
Well, she was like a rape victim.
Okay, well, I mean, that's not good.
She like, turned herself into a monster as like part of her like.
It's not even her fault that if you look at her, you turn to stone.
Right.
What is she supposed to do?
Right. Just don't look at her. It's on you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We also got a call out here in this one, usury.
Oh.
Usury.
Okay. What is usury?
Yeah, what is usury?
Do you know?
I know simony.
I know that it's
That's
a thing.
That's what I was expecting.
Usury is interest on loans.
That's it.
Yes.
Which is forbidden.
Yeah, the Bible is very against usury. Uh-huh. You know, if you're like, what is the Bible? You know, we talked about homosexuality in the Bible, because some Christians out there, it's called an abomination. Usury is also called an abomination.
Right.
A lot more frequently.
Right.
And it's very, the Bible is very against usury.
Especially against people who, like, could never pay it back.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, in abusive situations. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, major, you know, interest where you're always paying off the interest. You never actually pay off the loan that you've been paying five times as much as you've taken out. That's it. Very much. So, so if our economic value is based a lot on usury.
Yep.
Yeah.
Going straight to the ring six.
So when I go buy a car later this year, should I take my Bible with me?
You should.
And what helpful passages should I have tabbed?
Yeah, you should definitely do that. You should also film it because we want to see what happens when that goes down. Yeah.
And call them all sinners.
Right. I'll see you in hell.
I'll include the Bible verses on my next student loan payment as
That's
well.
Right.
Right.
instead of writing in the amount, you just write in a Bible verse.
Right. Yeah.
All right, so here we're going to pivot to talk about sloth.
Okay.
Sloth.
Yeah, so I thought this would, it's got to go somewhere.
Might as well go here.
So this is.
Why not?
Yeah, and this is the one that we don't have a clearer connection to.
Yeah.
So I thought sloth could fit here. All right, the idea that this is the only life and that sloth is twofold. All right.
Okay.
So the first idea is laziness, right? Like that's what you think of immediately. Of like, if you're slothful, you're lazy.
Yes. Also, you just move slow.
Yes.
Right. Or you're tired.
But it is a translation of the Latin term acedia or acedia, which means without care.
Ooh. Mm.
And so I thought that this might be the idea of like, if this is it, that could be a without care kind of thing. Where like, it not necessarily mean like you're not working, but there's no plan beyond today.
Yeah, there's no point.
Because there's no point.
Yeah.
It's so whatever I want to do today, that's what I should do.
Because this is all I got.
Because, yeah, that's it. And so I thought
there's no greater power, there's no greater purpose. Yeah.
That this kind of could be an aspect of sloth.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's wrong with sloth?
Well, for one, I mean, there's lots of things beyond today.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that'd be one place, like what we do affects other people. And so if we're only living for ourselves, if we're taking it in that direction, that's certainly not helpful for the good of humanity.
You can look at it as like a waste of potential, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're wasting your time. You're wasting your potential. You're not motivated.
Yeah.
You do that.
Yeah. There are also people who need justice. And if I'm slothful and just like, I can't be bothered to care about other people. Like that is also really not good, right? Like we're called love our neighbor, to care for our neighbor. And if I can't be bothered, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is definitely, I think, an interesting one when we talk about, especially connected to anger, you know, like love and anger are not enemies. Like they sometimes can go hand in hand, but love and apathy are enemies.
Yeah, sure.
Like it is impossible to love with apathy. Like those things cannot go together because apathy is, non-feeling or I've given up kind of a thing. And so this is, I think, a big part, in scripture. It's not just about like, well, you need to go get a job.
Right.
It's you just need to care about the creation, the creator, and created beings around you. Mm-hmm. Those are the things you need to be concerned about. And if you're not concerned about any of that, then, this is maybe like, what good are you then? And so it's more than just like, I like to sleep in. This is, I've stopped caring about the world around me, the people in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
There is a place in Timothy, one of Paul's letters, where he talks about like, if you're not working, you shouldn't be fed at the Lord's table, basically.
Yeah.
But that's out of context. It's not what's happening.
It's definitely out of context. That's sometimes used to be like, we shouldn't do food stamps.
Right.
That's not what they're talking about.
Yeah. All right. Any ways that this could pop up for Christians? I mean, beyond how does this materialize for us?
I think one of the things is that we have, we kind of like take our faith life and say, this is the hour of which I do something, I care about something on Sunday morning, and then we don't live that out the rest of the week. I think that is an act of sloth.
Mm.
I think that we're saying like, oh, I can't be bothered to care about this except for this 1 hour a week, and that covers me, so I don't have to worry about anything else. I don't have to actually care for my neighbor when I'm out in the world. I don't have to actually take a step that would change my life for someone else's benefit. Like, I think that's an act of sloth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pointing to like, I was baptized, I go to church as evidence of faith, and not how I live my life amongst my neighbor or my family or my community. I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
I think too, like, sometimes sloth is like pursued, and sometimes compassion fatigue can set in for all of us, like where we feel for everything, and then we all of a sudden get so overwhelmed that we kind of check out a little bit. And that may be, I think, healthy for a season, but sometimes seasons multiply into years, you know, and, and then I think that reaches a level of like, I cared so much that I got overwhelmed and now I don't care at all.
Yeah.
Is not necessarily the solution to that problem. Yeah.
I keep thinking about depression in this. Yeah. Like there's so many things with like Dante that we get into, like with suicide as well, which is another very sensitive topic for people, right? Like his handling of that and his writing. Again, you know, time
it's gross.
Does not reflect a 21st century
like,
understanding of
mental
health.
He's writing about things that he does not fully understand, right?
Clearly.
And are very, he lands in a very different place than hopefully we would land today. So I feel like I have to kind of say, all right, what Dante's version of sloth reads a lot like he's chastising people for being depressed, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And so then, like, what can we look at that would be maybe biblical and helpful about sloth that is not like a characteristic of like a chemical imbalance in your brain that, you know, would lead people to have this lived experience sometimes chronically for a really long time.
For sure. I hope we can clarify for listeners. Yeah. Like chemical depression is very, very different than even like pursued sloth
you know, like what is the sin of sloth, like what are we talking about there versus like I feel checked out, I feel disconnected from the world, which is all symptoms of depression, you know, like
they are, and we certainly don't want to make light of that, but I think there is a distinction between a chemical imbalance that leads us to that place and a choice, some people choose to check out and choose to not care for their neighbor,
or a series of choices,
right, and you know, if I'm driving down the street and I have every opportunity to help someone and I actively choose not to because I can't be bothered, that is different than depression, right? And so that for me is where it's lost.
But I think just reading Dante about, you're like, oh you know, like that's,
I would not take Dante at surface level as like the voice of rationale for what this looks like.
For me, sloth is definitely like just doom scrolling through Instagram on my phone instead of like anything else, like that's and maybe justifying in my brain of like, well, this is like I'm winding down or whatever, that's my me time, but this is, this would be, you know, I think for me an act of sloth of like I'm not gaining anything from this. I'm not, I honestly forget it all immediately. The moment my phone is, anything that I found interesting is gone immediately.
Yeah.
And so nothing has been gained. Nothing has been learned. Nothing has been done except I wasted an hour of my life.
Yeah.
You know, just scrolling through other people's stuff. And so I think that this could definitely be sloth, you know. So, all right, I got a story from the Bible.
Okay.
Matthew 24, parable of the talents.
The talents.
Yeah, so Jesus,
which don't
singing,
actually
dancing.
Mean, yeah, mean that.
Folding paper cranes.
Jesus does a talent show. Right. All right, Peter, what
and
you
I
got? Peter's like, all right, I know some sleight of hand, and you know, and Matthew is like, I know, mild ventriloquy, and
that's right,
John does a little song and dance.
Mild, as opposed to spicy ventriloquy, is that?
Well, like, you could still see his lips moving, but it's kind of, it's still kind of impressive.
Okay, yeah, sure, sure.
All right, so Jesus tells a story about this guy who's going out of town, and he goes to his three servants, and he gives one, you know, for sake of, you know, storytelling, $10, one $5, one $1.
Yeah, a talent is an amount of money. So he gives them each different talents,
But more than that. It's probably more like, here's like $1,000, $500, $100.
Yeah.
And maybe even more than
it
that.
It is, yeah. It's or, like, it's like a year's worth of salary, 5 years worth of salary, and like 10. Oof. Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so the first guy takes that money, does some good stuff with it.
Yeah.
You know, invests it. He
potentially an usury, which is unclear, but you know, he makes money off of it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's making money off of his 10 talents. The second guy does the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's following the David Ramsey guide.
Both of them double their money.
They double their money and they were able to give back double to the guy. And the last guy says, hey, I knew you were an angry, you know, master.
Yeah.
And I was worried if I used this and lost it that you'd be mad at me. So I buried it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put it in the sand. I didn't do anything. And then the master's like, hey, you could have at least invested in the bank, you know, like done something with it. And then he gets really, really mad and he takes his one talent and he gives it to the guy who has the most.
Yep.
And
I think the guy who had it taken away is told that he's going to be outside with weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Correct.
Yeah.
I don't know what circle that is.
Right.
One of them, yeah.
There's a lot of weeping going on. I'm not in a lot of happy places here in these circles. No. Nobody's like, man, this is not too bad.
Yeah. Maybe limbo.
Yeah. Maybe limbo's all right. Yeah. All right, so what is the story?
That's conga, sorry.
What are we getting out of this story here?
What do we got? I mean, I think that there's an element of sloth in this guy having having an opportunity to invest something and doing nothing with it. I think there's
being like frozen by like the what if a little bit, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I think one, if your perception of God is he's angry at you, I mean, maybe this is paralyzing. I think that could definitely be part of that. But two, yeah, like I know, like in youth group, you know, it's oftentimes like you've been given gifts and abilities and talents and choosing to do nothing with them or choosing to not use them for any activist motions in your neighborhood or community or in your faith is this.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just sitting on it and doing nothing. And I don't think God will ever come down and be like, you didn't use your gift of whatever and I'm taking it away.
Yeah.
But it is saying, you know, like God is interested in you being a better version of you.
Yes.
Not just sitting on what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And using the gifts that you have for the benefit of the kingdom, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you have the ability to, I don't know, stir up a crowd and get people to follow you, using that to help people do good things as opposed to start a war,
right?
Is probably what God is looking for.
Yeah. Probably not. Yeah.
Just throw it out there.
Be careful how you use your talents.
So all you listeners who thought about starting a war today, we at Beyond Sunday strongly advise against it.
Yes. We're our on official record. Stance.
Yeah. We are taking a very brave and bold stance. You should not use your gift to start a war today.
We'll see what tomorrow holds.
Right.
All right.
All right, so we got two more circles and two more sins to go.
Mm-hmm. All right, what do we got left?
We have pride and envy.
I'm envious of how prideful I am. No way. You
should
of our listeners.
Be, they get to hear that in a month.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm envious that they get to hear how prideful I can be.
Right. So just real quick before we go for sloth, it doesn't have an official circle, right?
Yeah.
And it'd be, like we said, people don't really agree about where it gets lumped in. Some versions it's one place, some versions it's another. I think my favorite is in the Divine Comedy. He has them on a terrace, the slothful, but it's in part of purgatory. It's not in part of hell. And they have to do exercise, constant exercise, and like say self-affirmations.
In the purgatory one is a little, some interesting stuff that they, people who have these things but not bad enough to go to hell kind of have to do the reverse to get out of it.
Right.
So that's
it's pretty funny. It's like an aerobics class.
I think we covered the lustful ones that were not bad enough to go to hell.
Yeah.
In purgatory, they have to listen to love stories, you know, like romantic stories where everything works out in the end. Like, oh, that's what I actually want along.
It's just 10 things I hate about
I wanted to watch Sleepless in Seattle, you know. Like, yeah.
All closed door love scenes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
And the next time, Lucifer will make an appearance as
finally.
He's at the bottom level.
The wedding.
Yes.
Lucifer and Bethany,
I think.
What, Bethany?
I don't remember.
You were the one who brought her up. I don't know.
Something. It starts with a B.
Okay. Lady B and Lucifer.
I think it's Bethany. Let me look.
I don't think it's Bethany. I think it's something more oldish.
All right. You look it up while I do the thing. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode, you can join us again next month when we'll finish out our Seven Deadly Sins series. And every week on Beyond Sunday Podcast, you can send your thoughts to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And you can find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com. Beatrice. There it is. .com. Beatrice. All right.
So close.
Perfect timing. Yep. You nailed it.
All right. Thanks for listening, buddy. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.